The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O, straight from the center of the water conversation right here in the Berkshires at WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Super psyched to be here with you today. You know why? Because we got a really cool interview today with Jeremy Whalen for Congress, Massachusetts 1, and according to his literature, Our Movement, Our Time, and he gave me about half an hour of his time yesterday on the shores of Watershops Pond over in Springfield. Have that for you. Second half of the show, super psyched. We talked about water, its impact on our economy, impact on health, and ways that we could turn this baby around and, you know, perhaps get some new leadership too and all kinds of stuff. And yeah, water is in politics too. Guess what? And super psyched to be the one that brings it to you right here at WTBR FM 89.7, WTBR FM in Pittsfield, and 88.1 WSBR in Lee, and all over your internet podcast platforms. Just look for And So It Flows. You also want to check out our Spotify playlist called by the same name, And So It Flows, and go save that baby, because you want to get your water vibe on and super psyched about that. I will be bringing you some more city water, sparkling water, osmosis, and distilled. Well, so much for that. Anyway, we got some Creedence Clearwater Revival. We're gonna start off the show with off their Pendulum album, Have You Ever Seen the Rain? And over here in the Berkshires, definitely do. Got more rain here than in Colorado. Ha 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 ha. But if you're listening from Colorado, hat tip out to you over there. And love that state. Love that state. We'll be right back.
guess I should have warned you, it's all a contest. And you say they all wanted to hide you, but when they got deep inside you, it's a big mess. And you know me better now, and you see I'm in the middle. And you don't know why or how, but you sold me down your river. And I'm just plain all sandwiched in between. So save your water, woman, I won't drink out of your stream. Well, the shouts of a thousand disciples and the brass Winchester rifles brought the house down. Life's got a way it can burn you. You lose the high ground. And you know me better now, and you see I'm in the middle. And you don't know why or how, but you sold me down your river. And I'm just plain old sandwiched in between. So save your water, woman,
we'll all float on anyway. Well, I think you're making too get too heavy, we'll all float on. All right, already, we'll all float on. All right, already, we'll all float on. Okay, don't worry, we'll all float on. Even if things get heavy, we'll all float on. All right, already, we'll all float on. All right, don't you worry, we'll all float on.
You're all tuned in to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Super psyched to be with you today. My name is Leslie. I'm your Super Waterman, ambassador for water, bringing water culture all around the world from the Berkshires, which is Western Massachusetts, which is one of the capitals for culture in this America, United States of America. And we're bringing water culture all around the world. Check us out on your podcast platforms. Look for And So It Flows podcast. And also look for us on Spotify if you want your water vibe on. Got over, I don't know how many songs already, but lots of songs. Go ahead and save that and keep it there for your Spotify listening pleasure. Very excited to be today bringing to you Jeremy Whalen, who is running for the first congressional district of Massachusetts, which is Western Mass. And he'll be talking to us in just a couple of minutes. Had a chance to interview him yesterday with a shout out to Samuel Pasquale, who is going to be putting together our video section world. There's my phone ringing, so much for the phone. We're going to turn that phone off. But in the meantime, we got some really cool news today. And this is in the world of what's called balneotherapy, because you know what? In the world of balneotherapy, that's bath therapy. That cures a lot of ills. Some people think it even cures some of the most major ills. You go over to parts of the world where they really do have a lifestyle of thermal baths and hot baths and saunas and steam rooms and cold plunges and all that. They can serve quite a purpose to heal ourselves. So today, a little bit of water news from that space. And this is from Medscape.com, which is a medical journal. And balneotherapy shows promise for post-COVID syndrome. Some people call that long COVID, other things like that. And this is from June 26th, 2025. Balneotherapy combines the use of mineral or thermal waters with physical exercises performed in water for therapeutic purposes. This treatment is always carried out under the supervision of physicians. If you go to, a little side note, go to Hungary, Budapest, you can hang out there and use their medically supervised Turkish baths to really reverse some major illnesses. But we're going to talk about this COVID syndrome. Specializing in thermal medicine and physiotherapist said Natalie Garcia Geralt, PhD, a geneticist and balneotherapy expert at the Hospital Del Mar, Hospital of the Sea Research Institute in Barcelona, Spain, and a Biomedical Network Research Center, or on frailty and healthy aging in Madrid. In an interview with Univadis Spain, I don't know if I said that right, but Univadis Spain, a Medscape network platform. Balneotherapy is based on the chemical, physical, and thermal properties of mineral medicinal waters, aka curative. Depending on the source, these waters may contain elements such as sulfur, iron, calcium, sodium, bicarbonate, radon, or magnesium. They are typically applied topically for therapeutic, preventive, or rehabilitative purposes and may offer anti-inflammatory, analgesic, muscle-relaxing, or circulation-enhancing effects. This approach is widely supported in the fields of physical medicine and rehabilitation, particularly for conditions such as rheumatological diseases, osteoarthritis, fibromyalgia, dermatological conditions, and some respiratory and neurological disorders. It is. There's some more. Balneotherapy for long COVID. Long COVID is associated with persistent symptoms such as fatigue, musculoskeletal pain, and generalized anxiety, areas where balneotherapy has shown promise. Well, according to this side note, Hippocrates, who was a hydrotherapist at heart, because he did not have chemotherapy to give out at that time, he was into baths. Okay, back to the story. Prior evidence suggested that balneotherapy might help alleviate symptoms with long COVID, said Garcia Giralt. So what there is to do is to have that conversation with your doctor and talk to them about balneotherapy before you go asking for the next prescription of who knows what's in that thing. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. And of course, talk to your medical professional and do a little research at the same time. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. We got another song coming your way, but first, got this really cool poem, and this is called, what's it called? We are going to get Song of the Dolphins. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O.
So free, friends, leave me alone now. If you should stay with me, my friends, I can't go home now. I am the dolphin. I have lived my life in peace. Is this how you repay me? With your nets and PCBs, I have befriended you, led sailors to their homes, never asking anything but to be left alone. Yet you teach your children nothing of the way life used to be. Why can't you share this world with me? Yellowfin, run and hide my friends. Boat is approaching. If you should stay, we'll die, my friends. Do you need coaching? I have never had a reason now to fear that thing called man. We have always worked together since the day that time began. Now you're teaching me a lesson that I never should have learned, how friendships seldom last, and the weak will get burned. Yet you've taught your children nothing of the way things used to be. Why can't you share this world with me? See 1980, 7, Don Elroy, Living Canvas Music.
Got more music coming your way. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Thanks to Don Elroy. And that was actually called Song of the Dolphin. You'll find us at Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, and all over your podcast platforms. And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Super sweet to little announcement. We're going to be transforming not just into the world of podcasting and a rock and roll show for water through radio and that, but we're also going to be transforming into the land of video. So stay tuned for that. It's going to start off here at PCTV and move out from there. Super psyched about that. Let's see what we got for a little bit of music. We have some Billy Joel, for me, from River of Dreams. And thanks again for tuning in and share about us with all your water-loving friends.
And So It Flows, the only show for H2O here in our first video format podcast. You could find normally on WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and now also on PCTV and growing from there. Excited to be talking water shop with the new congressional candidate running against Richie Neal in the upcoming Democratic primary. coming up. When is the primary?
So it's going to be September of 2026. So we got some time. So yeah, there might be a couple of episodes that that I'm on over here. So
yeah. So we're talking Water Shop here on Water Shop's Pond here in Springfield, here in Western Mass. So tell me a little bit about why are you running? Why are you running for office?
Yeah. So I, for the last 11 years, I've been a high school teacher, and I love my job. I love my students, and I have, you know, largely invested in my community in really, you know, meaningful ways, invested in myself academically. But over that time, the thread line has been, I'm doing everything that I can within my classroom, within Western and Central Massachusetts, but I'm not getting any help from the top. You know, and we have some wonderful local leaders around here, but if you're constantly getting bombarded by these things that you're trying to protect your community from, you're going to have a bad time. And so I like to use this analogy from this old study. It's from 1968, called the Smoky Room Experiment. And the Smoky Room Experiment is, there were a bunch of people, you know, spread out in a room that are actors, and one person is the actual study experiment. And you go into the room, and everybody is sitting around, and smoke is billowing from under the door. How long does it take for that individual that's not planted there to get up and say, hey, there's something going on here? And it's surprisingly long. It's that room could fill with smoke. I feel like we're in that current situation right now.
Yeah.
And the room is not just filled with smoke. It's the walls are on fire.
Yeah.
And so what I did naturally was say, you know, how did we get here, and who allowed this to happen? And then you start to do a little digging. And it doesn't take that much digging. One internet search away from seeing that, you know, my opponent, Richard Neal, is one of the top recipients percentage-wise in all of Congress for corporate impact money, over Democrats and over Republicans.
Whoa.
You know, he's got a $4 million war chest. 75% of his money comes from corporations and PACs, and less than 0.15%, 0.15% comes from small donors. So what does that mean? He's not in the district. He's not around. And he's not having these face-to-face interactions that you need to have to understand issues like we're going to be talking about today.
So you're saying he's out of touch?
Out of touch. And it's also generational change. He's 76 years old. I'm 38 years old. I think that everybody understands that it's time.
Yeah.
But I also offer a new perspective on all of this. You know, I am always in the community. I'm going around in my little yellow van and meeting a bunch of people and understanding what it really means to represent Western and Central Massachusetts and do so in an authentic way that's true to myself and it's true to the people that I will be representing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what brings me here today. You know, I appreciate the work that you're doing, enlightening me on some really, you know, important issues in the Berkshires and in the Valley. And I'm looking forward to our conversation here, Leslie.
Yeah, let's talk. We're by the water.
Yeah.
A couple of things, obviously. I'm really concerned about that, but really backing it up a little bit to where you started. More than being a Democrat, I'm a sports dad.
All right.
And what comes with the ability to be a sports dad is that you reserve the right to tell your team when they suck. And as a Democrat, I get to say that. I get an opportunity to say that, not as someone just as a flippant way of you just are no good at what you're doing. It's like we're in this predicament because we're in this smoky room. It reminds me of a song, not a water song, but the song by Rush. I forgot the title of the song, but the words are in the backs of cars, in the shopping malls, be cool or be cast out. So yeah. There's this whole thing of not wanting to say what the issue is because you're going to look bad.
Yes, exactly.
Perhaps. Okay.
I think that self-awareness is so important for progress. If you can't address what are legitimate problems within yourself or within your community or within your party, you can't move forward in a productive manner. And so having that kind of come to Jesus moment and having that self-realization and that introspective ability to say, hey, you know, there's some really good things that are going on, but we always need to be moving the needle, you know, closer to, you know, something that's better, that's something better for not just yourself, but for future generations. That's why thinking about what we're talking about today with water is super important.
Yeah, yeah. And it's even water is very important in that, but it is actually pretty much textbook case poster child of what do you do in the world of post-industrialism.
Yeah.
In a cities in Western Mass, there are several. Fitchburg, Pittsfield, some people would say Springfield, Westfield, post-industrial. What does that mean?
Yep.
The economy been hollowed out, and the corporations that are either left or have left a gift for us to deal with. And that gift is giving in a way that, let's say in Pittsfield, there are lawsuits against Monsanto and General Electric to clean up the PCBs that are still impacting people and people still getting sick to this day.
Yeah.
And impacted. You have in Westfield, Mass, you had a huge PFAS spill. You had, you know, like, and you're a teacher. So I'm going to speak to the teacher perspective is like, how do we now do things that look difficult and move through it and come to the other side with a breakthrough in science, perhaps?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of this thing called bioremediation? Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I'm somewhat familiar with it, but yeah, if you want to explain it a little bit more,
too. It's essentially the way I see it, and not a scientist. What I do know is that you can use the earth and things from the earth to help heal the earth with mushrooms, with biochar, with perhaps even hemp, other ways, using natural marshes, which are nature's natural filter, to clean the mess that we made and put time and effort and focus on how are we going to clean this up without the need to dredge the whole thing and make more of a mess, or to dig a hole, to dig another hole, to put cement on top, which is what is being considered for the town of Lee, Massachusetts.
Yeah. I think the two things that you hit on that are really important is education. Education is really, we were talking about the self-awareness and all of that. Education is how, one, you become informed at the situation that presents itself at hand, but two, then you can create innovative solutions to really solve these. And then speaking to your second point, the remediation, I often think, and you know, my doctorate is in mathematics, science, and learning technologies. I think that we often think that we can hit the last exit in addressing some of these things on environmental issues or climate change, and that technology is going to be the thing that saves us. I think there's going to be a mixture of thinking about how technology can help us within certain frameworks, but I also think that we need to use our knowledge about how the earth can heal itself in meaningful ways as well.
Yeah.
That innovation, you know, the earth has been around for a lot longer than humans. So as we kind of progress as a society and develop ourselves, we can improve the lives for humans, but we can also improve just the outlook of how the earth, you know, heals itself, like you were saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with some help, I would, let's say, kombucha for the water. Kombucha is a tea-like substance that you drink, has some flavors. It helps your gut, cleans your gut out, which is good for your health, your skin, all that, your mental health. Let's talk about if we put together, let's say, a science competition, because this kind of bioremediation has gotten rid of lots of industrial pollution in many places around the world. What's stopping Western Mass to invest into what John F. Kennedy said about water. The person who handles the water issue should get two Nobel Prizes, one for peace and one for science. Why not have that be a community instead of one person? Why doesn't Massachusetts get behind that? Would that be something that you would support? A breakthrough in our ability to use science to clean up the messes that we made?
Yeah. I think from a kind of national perspective, it alarms me how science is under attack. Science is the experimentation with things to find out knowledge that is repeatable within those experiments, the addressing that we have a wealth of knowledge and a foundational understanding of how the world operates, and then we can start to take bits of that and experiment further, right? My doctorate is very, very specific in one little kind of needle point off of a larger educational framework, right? That's for science as well. I think that when it comes to thinking how we are totally disregarding science, that is scary. I think that on the Massachusetts level, on the state level, we can be a model for the rest of the country and then use that model as a framework for expanding to a national stage.
Yeah.
We do a lot of things right here. We're number one in education. We're very close to the top on, if not the top, on healthcare. We are, for the most part, leaders on some environmental issues, but we can always do better. And then we can take all of that knowledge and then transfer that into different situations throughout the country.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll take that as an answer, and I'll also take that as, like, there's work to do here.
There's always work to be done. And you have to look at specific municipality by municipality.
Okay, let's take a look at one specific issue.
For sure.
And it's also regarding water, and it's very relevant to lots of folks, especially in the town of Great Barrington. Town of Great Barrington has a village within it called Housatonic Village. And for somewhere close to several decades, some people say up to 50 years, the water supply, private water supply company, has for some reason not given really good potable and even marketable water to the people of Housatonic. And with the studies that have been done, there could be up to $3 to $5 million behind in the upkeep and the investment into the pipes and the filters and all that stuff. Where do you stand with the investing into water supply systems within
state? Water supplies are crucial, right? I come from Belchertown. That's where I was raised. And to think about Quabbin and to think about the kind of the enormous task it was to create that that body of water for Boston and the things that we do in order to provide potable water within our communities, you need to prioritize the health and safety of the individuals that you are delivering that water to. The things that stand out to me are privatization of certain water systems. I think that the public needs to be able to invest in that infrastructure and be and hold accountable any, you know, issues that may arise from different parts of that infrastructure, and also be kind of updating that on a regular basis with new technologies or new types of pipes with different coatings. We saw what played out in Flint, and it's still playing out to this day. That is a tragedy, and I hope that we learn from the lessons of places like that, and we start to invest and seriously consider the health impact that some of these older infrastructure can have.
Well, it's all over. It's all over Western Mass. Like I said, Westfield had a PFAS bill. Yep. We had PCBs. We got Housatonic without access to water. Would you be in favor of publicly funding water supply systems within the state so they could, you know, either invest into their infrastructure if it's privately held, or invest and purchase it for the community?
I think that you can look at different pots of money to help with this. And you can look at it from the municipal level, you can look at it at the state level and the national level. And I would advocate for all of those. I think that there's some tremendous work being done at Holyoke by the current Mayor Garcia. And he is really leading the charge on updating millions of dollars invested in updating in Holyoke. Holyoke is also an industrialized, post-industrial city. And the revitalization of the city comes revitalization of the water systems, because it's very important to like we were talking about, the health and safety of everybody. And in modernizing a city, you have to think about the funding and the infrastructure, and thinking about trying to combine all three of those pots in a way that's going to make meaningful impact in the community.
Yeah, for creating a livable city, a livable town, a livable village.
Yep. In East Hampton, for instance, East Hampton, it's funny. It's the number one potable drinking water. It's like taste-wise, they do phenomenal job over there. Just right in our own backyard, you know, probably about 20 minutes from my house. And we can look at what is going right within our communities as well, while at the same time addressing the issues that need to be addressed to move everybody forward.
Okay. Are you familiar with what are called blue spaces?
No, not really.
Okay.
Yeah. Enlighten me. This is what I love about it, you know?
It's in the world of urban planning for towns and villages. So to give you some examples, this could be considered a blue space.
Cool.
It's more private because of someone's backyard. The Charles River in Boston, lots of people know about the Charles River.
Yep.
You know how they have parks and walkways and basketball courts and places where people can jog.
Yeah.
Take a kayak out.
Yep. Some of my students row on that in competitions.
Yeah. The benefits of that is, you know, if you're here, you were here just a few minutes before we started. When you're by the water, you feel better. Your mental health gets clarified. You clear your mind. You're able to have, you may have come in with an issue that you were concerned about, but what the water provides, being by the water, provides access to a clearer mind so you can deal with the things that you're worried about.
Yeah.
Like, how am I going to pay that bill? Or what am I going to do with this letter I got from the state? Or what am I going to do with a family member who's not feeling well?
Yep. And for millennia, it also provides community. If you look around at where kind of centralized locations of human existence are, it's at waterways, because those watering holes are figuratively and literally the sustenance of life. You need to develop, we're talking about kind of industrialization and using it for mills and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But those, you know, you go back further in history and those places are vital for life sustenance. You literally need water, you know?
Sure.
And so those become places where people aggregate, and where you have aggregation of that, you have aggregation of ideas, and you have aggregation of the things that you need for components of a functioning society.
Uh-huh.
And so you can find a lot of interaction in interpersonal connection within those places.
Yeah, water is where human beings habitated.
Yeah.
You know, they built their civilizations around water.
Yeah.
You got the Code of Hammurabi, which is from Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
That code was one of the original laws. There had some river laws of how to take care of your water, how to take care of the river. Here in Western Mass, there's a town of North Adams.
Yeah.
And they are
my brother went to school there, MCLA. Yeah.
They are interested in having a look at their flood control systems to move away from the cement chutes, which destroy river life, as well as can be an impact to the actual flow of the river. The fish don't like the cement chutes. They don't go through them. And to create a flood control that more closely mimics a river.
Yeah.
Would you be in support of looking at blue spaces overall and just take a look at how are we going to invest in this so we can empower our communities and look at flood control and see how we can have it more closely mimic an actual natural place.
Yeah, I think that it's really important to understand that the systems that we have in place for dams and for kind of the flood control that we're talking about were created at a time in which we weren't necessarily as enlightened as we are today about the scientific, the environmental impact it has, particularly on fish. And, you know, you look at the Holyoke Dam and what needs to be happening for like fish elevators and things of that nature. I think that we have the ability as these infrastructures start to deteriorate too, because they can be, you know, several decades old. Sometimes we're talking about over 100 years old, these kind of these dams, to reevaluate how they were created and what the actual impact is. So definitely analyzing that and making the appropriate adjustments are part of modernizing the system. And I would definitely be in favor of, you know, looking at and investigating the best possible scenarios for those, because there's you know, climate change is real. We are in kind of unprecedented times in which it's not just something that we see on TV. This is happening within the communities that are in, you know, Western and Central Massachusetts. I was just over at a farm over in East Hampton, and they lost a large swath of their crop that was located right by the Connecticut River because of flooding, because of climate change. You know, I drive by these farms in South Hadley, and I see where they would have corn, and it's just all water now. Mm-hmm. And so these things are very real within our own communities, and we need to find ways to address them while also modernizing our infrastructure. So we can do, it's a win-win. You mm-hmm. can do both at the same time.
Yeah. That's great. For those of you just tuning in, I'm Leslie Gabriel, Super Waterman Ambassador for Water here with And So It Flows, the only show for H2O out of Pittsfield, Massachusetts, WTBR FM 89.7 on, if you're listening on the radio, and also pretty soon to be on your video channels all over the place. Here on our first video format with Jeremy Whalen. Yeah. Jeremy spells his name.
It's a weird spelling. It's J-E-R-O-M-I-E, and then Whalen is W-H-A-L-E-N. And what an amazing first video episode,
isn't
right?
Isn't it great? Right by the water?
We got the water, and it's just like nice and calm. We can hear the birds chirping. It's a really cool vibe.
It is.
Thanks for meeting with me,
yeah,
Leslie. This
thanks,
is awesome.
Thanks. It's really, really great, and yeah. I acknowledge that you took some time to actually have that happen. How about let's deal with something that really wants to be dealt with. And I'm going to go back to Pittsfield.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's the game of corporate accountability.
Yeah.
There is paperwork that has been divulged through a variety of different lawsuits that are going on between Lee and Monsanto and General Electric. Number one is that they knew that this stuff was not good for you before they let everybody else know. And the EPA started really getting concerned about PCBs only in the mid-70s, 1976, I believe it was brought up as a carcinogen. What about holding accountability to corporate corporations? And then second part of that is how do we eliminate any corporate capture of regulatory agencies, such as in this case the EPA, so they're not having such a revolving door and there's some accountability that's available for the corporations? What do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm seeing it play out in so many different facets when it comes to corporations. Right now, I'm seeing it play out within the campaign finance and what I'm dealing with as a candidate. But I also think that when we look at the history of corporations, you have to look at where the allegiances lie when it comes to the big names that were here and then left and why they left, right? When you have that much money and you are beholden to shareholders, and you are a corporation that I do not believe should hold the rights as people, as we see in like a Citizens United ruling.
Yep.
What happens is there's nothing that really keeps them within your community. So we can look at GE in Pittsfield, right? In the heyday, GE was rocking it. It was the, you know, really huge for the city. You know, everybody was employed there. It had a tremendous impact on Pittsfield. But when it comes to money, when it comes to moving things aside, GE is not a family-owned business that's going to stay in the town because it cares about its people. GE is going to take its shareholder profits and move to the next place where it can make more money and screw everybody else over within that community.
It's called privatizing the wealth while socializing the liability.
Yep. And so what you have is you have GE moving out, and then you have a kind of the people aren't moving out. You know, in fact, you know, the population is increasing, but now the corporation who you thought was your best friend over here is nowhere to be found. And so that has so many impacts on so many
different
levels.
They're in a defensive crouch.
Yeah.
And, you know, justifiably so. So
going back to the solution to that, right?
What do you think?
One, you had come here, kind of pillaged the land, and then bounced. You're going to be held accountable for cleaning up the mess, and you're going to be accountable to every person that you put jeopardize their health. Like, you can't just leave and think that that's not going, there's no repercussions that's going to happen. So really holding corporations accountable within that and saying, how can you pay this debt back? How can we clean up this mess? And also, how can we create more vibrancy, not only within the economic, you know, the economic damage or the environmental damage, rather, that you did, but how can we kind of reclaim some of the economic damage that you did as well? And I think that those two things can
go hand in
hand.
That's actually going to come from the water.
Yeah.
Simply put, if we're able to do what the vision is, then you could show that through the water, a whole new economic possibility opens up.
Yeah.
You can actually have more people come for what people come to Western Mass a lot for right now, which is the beauty,
the
nature,
yeah,
the connection to a place. Building up new small businesses, having people be able to move in without the fear of health repercussions.
Yep.
That's all possible. We can literally prove perpetual economies.
Yeah.
If we learn the skill of cleaning up after our messes.
Exactly. And there is other benefits to other than just saving the planet, right? I say this stuff with the Green New Deal, right? One, we shouldn't need another incentive to just be taking care of the only planet that we have the ability to live on. But if you do need another incentive, it's economic it's job creation and economic prosperity. Like, the way in which you're going to clean up these rivers and lakes and so on and so forth is by having individuals that are employed to do so. And so that's going to bring money into the economy. When you have cleaner rivers and lakes, there's people that are going to come here for more tourism. And so it's going to have a large impact on a lot of different facets of the local economy.
Yeah.
Than just saying, oh, we're going to clean this up. Although that's, you know, I want to clean it up. That's the philosophically, you know, that's what we need, but it's also going to bring a lot of other benefits as well.
Yeah, just like it would if you invested into the infrastructure of a water supply system, such as in the village of Housatonic. You'll have more people move in because guess what?
Yeah.
They're no longer getting the brown water from their faucets, and they could feed their dog Fido and give them water, or, you know, their kids want to take a bath and doesn't have to be in manganese water that's all brown and kind of questionable. So investing, cleaning, all great. All wonderful.
All wonderful.
All wonderful. Next question. Really, and I'd like to really end with this. What is your, do you have like any particular foundational water story for yourself? Like, what's your connection personally?
When I was thinking about this, and it's one that is from like an early childhood experience, but I think that it says a lot about, wow, you do have an impact on society. I fished a lot when I was younger, right? Love fishing. Grew up in Belchertown, and I would go to Knight's Pond. Okay. Knight's Pond was actually, you actually couldn't fish there because it was a local water supply. But, you know, being a kid, you just go around, sneak around the back, throw a line in and things like that. And I never really thought anything of it because, you know, I'm catching my bass, catching my pickerel, and, you know, I'm just a kid having a good time. I remember one day I'm fishing and I hear a kind of commotion, and I look over and there was a goose that had been stuck in a fishing line, and I kind of swam out to it and I got the fishing line or like off around its neck, and it just stuck out to me as one of those moments of, yeah, that sign is there that says you shouldn't fish because you could have an impact and stuff like that, but, you know, I got my fishing pole and I'm gonna do what I want, you know. And I, that day I just, you know, I get the goose free and I'm just thinking, wow, like that's why you can't fish here. And then you take that and then you say, you know, that's why we need to appreciate our water supplies. That's why we need to, you know, invest in the infrastructure for clean water. Because you may not see it at first, you know, you may not, it may be something that's just kind of in the back of your mind or put away. But the minute that you do see it, it's too late. And so we need to be preemptively thinking about this. And we need to be taking care of our water supplies, and we need to be taking care of each other. Really.
Perfect.
Thanks again for tuning in. You're listening to A Show It Flows, your only show for H2O. And onward, water lovers.
Water. Sparkling water. Lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled.
See you next week when we have another episode of Berkshire Water Beat with Leslie Bestman from the Berkshire Edge. Love your water.
In the abundance of water, the food.